You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-fits-all branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code pod20 for 20% off your first product.
Nah, not those lions. Three lions we can get behind.
And he hoofed it.
There's more pressure being ratcheted up with a loss like that, of course.
Just getting the head boxed off, should that just kind of happen.
For all your Lions coverage this summer, download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetSetGo.ie.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating at least 100,000 to Irish football via England Goals this summer. Gamble responsibly. GamblingCare.ie.
Welcome back, England, through to the next round. 2-0 winners against Germany. Mark Lawrenson with us. Hi, Mark.
How you doing?
So, where do you want to start in this?
They deserved it, in fairness. Like anything in a knockout stage, you will always maybe have a spell where you don't play particularly well, concede the chance, which was to Werner, wasn't it? Should have scored. Mm. I think he scores goals, Werner, but he's not a goal scorer. I think it was one of those, keeper comes out, natural goal scorers just dink it over the keeper.
Yeah.
Obviously, he went to go low. And England did well. And then, of course, the Thomas Müller of chance was, of all the German players who played tonight, you'd say, if you wanted a one-on-one, who would you want? It would have been him. And obviously, he didn't really connect with it at all. But England kept at it. The quality of the goals as well that they scored were good. And they work unbelievably hard. They make you raise your game. They make it very, very difficult for you. But, you know, quite a few teams had chances against them. But it would appear at the moment that everything's going for them at the moment.
You mentioned the Müller chance. I mean, there are lots of reasons we all like football. The human drama is part of it. And the shots of Raheem Sterling, who, and I'm not sure it's his natural game to be dilly-dallying on the ball and trying to be too clever and play down the clock, loses the ball and then hands on his head. The shot, you know, we have is from behind and Müller pulls the chance wide and he just collapses almost in complete relief. His entire life flashed before him.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, that's just the way that this is. I mean, the two games we had last night were just absolutely fabulous in many, many different ways that we all know and loved and watch. And tonight was always going to be just a strange one because England and Germany obviously have this history for many different reasons, not just as footballers, everybody knows. But and the English as well always seem to have a problem in beating the Germans. But they've done well tonight. They played extremely well. But I would have to say to you, this is by far and away the most average German team I've seen for a while. Yes, it's got a sprinkling of some very good players, but it's also got quite a few ordinary players as well in there. And they didn't really play with masses of conviction. They got on the ball first 10 or 15 minutes and we all thought, oh, here we go. But it just never, ever really materialised. And I think the other thing as well, when you know the manager's going to go if obviously you lose that game, I don't ever think it's quite the same thing. I never understand why football associations let managers carry on when they announce that they're going to retire. I think you just say, pay them off or whatever and shake their hands, have a party and say, thanks very much, get the new man in.
Yeah.
But obviously Germany didn't want to do that.
The lame duck syndrome.
Yeah.
In that first 10, 15 minutes where Germany maybe had their most consistent spell of dominance are certainly being on top. It was notable, they went through the centre of England pretty easily. There was the Werner chance you mentioned, and then there was early on Declan Rice almost had to professionally take someone down who was going through as well. So that was kind of striking, you know, three centre backs and the two boys pretty defensively minded, and still Havertz and Müller found some gaps there and went through them pretty quickly.
They did, and it was I wouldn't say it was a breakaway as such, but it was where Germany came out with the ball, and I think they suddenly realised their forward players, and one thing about them, they're both rapid. They were there and they were gone. So, well, they rode the luck, which is, it happens. Mm. I thought for a moment that Rice, if he caught him really properly, he might have got sent off. In the end, it was, is it in inverted commas, a good...
Yeah.
Sort of tackle, but look, they've ridden over it, so it'll be a worry, yeah. I suppose. But then, are they going to play a team in the next round who are going to do that to them? I mean, we don't know because it's knockout football. So what is it? Sweden or who is it? Sweden or Ukraine?
Yeah,
isn't
Ukraine,
it?
Ukraine. I've given up predicting things after last night, which I'll ask you about in a second. to be fair to England, they were then pretty much on top rest of that first half. Where are you on Harry Kane? He was very much the focus of the BBC halftime conversation. Shearer felt his movement was no good. Klinsmann was making an interesting point. He was saying Kane should come deep and play himself into the game. He does it at Spurs to feel more alive was kind of the phrase he used. And I don't know, did we see a bit more of that from Kane in the second half? Where are you on Harry Kane's form at the moment?
Well, The other week when it started and everyone was on about him, all I ever said was that, you know, get him some chances. Get people up and around him. And you know, Grealish came on, makes a difference. Sterling as well did extremely well. But Harry Kane, if you watch him at Tottenham, as we all do, and we all rave about him, he has Son in and around him, and he drops off and Son goes in behind him, vice versa. And he's got loads of movement. But I think... One of the problems is, for him really, was the ball from kind of back, middle to the front for England generally comes very, very slowly, unless Pickford pinged a 70-yarder. Mm. So it's very, very difficult for him. He's virtually up there on his own, because if it's Sterling on one side, Foden on the other, or Grealish, they actually sit quite deep. And he's forever surrounded by two, three, sometimes even four players.
Yeah.
So it's difficult. But you saw him as soon as the ball came in the box, as soon as Grealish got on him, his movement was fab, and bang, he just didn't miss.
No.
And it's, you know, it's a bit like, you know, feed the dog, he's hungry, just feed him.
He'll score. And even the header, I mean, it was beautiful. It was beautifully dispatched. Look, he was always going to score it, but you saw kind of the finisher... in him. On Southgate, so, and how he set the team up, because I saw, and look, Twitter is only a reflection of I don't know what, but the general reaction from even the football fraternity, the various journalists who cover England week in, week out, was this was a very conservative selection, cowardice almost. You know, these kind of words were coming in, the narrative was being shaped, they were sharpening knives if things didn't work out in advance.
British press.
Yeah. So look, Foden, Grealish, Mount, maybe Rashford to a lesser extent, all left out. But I suspect now Southgate will turn around and say, Phillips and Rice, I knew they'd take care of those two in midfield and largely did okay. And Shaw and Trippier handled, you know, Gosens been one of the players of the tournament.
Yeah,
and Kimmich's
yeah,
a really
yeah,
good
yeah.
player. And you have Shaw putting in a cross for the crucial goal. So actually, he may well make an argument that, unlike, say, the Croatia game, where the fullbacks didn't cross the halfway line, perversely, it may not be the names of Mount or Grealish or Foden starting, but Trippier and Shaw in particular are actually attacking the game a bit more now. And in some ways, I don't want to say it was out-and-out attacking, but it certainly wasn't like super conservative either, the way they played today.
No, and I think the idea is the kind of... With Rice and Phillips, I think, you know... back three, back five today, whatever you wanted to call it. They have this kind of... They want to build this base in the game where it's very, very difficult for the opposition to break down. And always in football, no matter how bad a team you are, you'll get opportunities and you'll get spells in the game where you will have the ball. And it seems very much it's like what happens is the opposition do not score. And then eventually, you know, I think what England do is that they kind of wear teams down, and they make good substitutions. I mean, Grealish comes on. That would seem to be the favourite thing at the moment. He comes on, has a little bit of room, goes past fullbacks, etc., holds the ball up, gets your fouls, etc. And I think they did say, didn't they, that is it Holland, his assistant, Steve Holland, I think it is, and Southgate They'd studied for months teams who'd won these competitions, not necessarily outstanding teams that had won, but maybe teams that were a little bit unfancied, like a Greece. Remember Greece winning? And I think that was in Portugal, I think, wasn't it? And one or two others like that. And they decided definitely that in the first few rounds, certainly, or that certainly league basis, they would be very cautious and very, very difficult to beat. And that was all about not conceding and thinking at the business end, even if there was only probably maybe three players at the business end. So, you know, Sterling, Kane, Foden in the first game. They would eventually fashion chances that would get them chances to score, etc. And that's exactly the way that they've been. As to the next game, who knows?
And do you like that logic? Do you think that's fair enough, or is it reductive and conservative and a little, you know, they could be doing a whole lot more?
Well, England in the World Cup, I mean, they got through to the semi-finals. To be honest with you, they didn't beat anyone.
No,
not a good side. They did not beat a good side, and I'm not being bitter about that. They just didn't. And as soon as they played a good side, i.e., Belgium or Croatia, they got beat. But they kind of they got the nation with them, which I think is very, very important. And I think Gareth Southgate is just a really, really nice guy. What you see is what you get. And I think he's always going to get a little bit longer in the job. And this was always going to be their best chance because they're at home, aren't they? I know.
Yeah.
Next leg, I don't know, they're away somewhere. I'm not sure where they go. But they're definitely away. And then they come back and I think arguably they can be at home for the last two games. And by the way, last game, Wembley can be full as well. But that's just the way that they've been. And nobody can argue with it. And the whole thing is, everybody has an opinion about England, in England. Your Milkman, your Windeclear, they've all got an opinion. And do you know, in these days where everybody knows about tactics because it's, you know, you see all the programs, the technical programs all about tactics and, you know, low blocks and high blocks and absolutely everything, three at the back, two at the back, all those kind of stuff. So everybody's got even more of an opinion than they've ever had before because they've got a lot more knowledge. So that's probably doesn't help in his favour, but he's just that way. No, this is the way that we're going to be. And I think the FA said the other day that even if he fails, in inverted commas, in this competition, he will not lose his job.
Well, so, I think what you have to say in his favour, and look, it's early days to know if Gareth Southgate's going to be regarded as a great manager in 20 years or not, but he's not afraid to make decisions which, if England lose the game, will be jumped upon, i.e. Trippier in the first game or the change in formation today. Like, he would have known how easy it would have been for the media at large and the fans at large to point to Mount or to point to Grealish or whatever. And maybe a lesser, more insecure manager doesn't play Trippier in the first game, even though he has a hunch it might be the right thing to do. So that's what I sort of admire about Southgate, is that he's making decisions which will be seized upon, and he will know that, and he seems strong enough not to let that affect his thinking.
Yeah, and he knows exactly what he wants. And the other thing about it is we don't know the mental side of these players. I mean, obviously, he doesn't have them in terms of club football, so he doesn't have them every day of the week, 7 days a week, etc. But he will know that from the relatively small time he spends with them, what they're like. And you know, the Trippier thing, he just said, in the first game against Croatia, playing him at left back, I absolutely trust him.
Yeah.
And you know, he can come in and play with his right foot, so it's not an issue. I absolutely trust him. And I mean, if you're sending players out at this level and you can trust every single one of them, then you've got a chance. And if they know that you trust them, they will play for you. I mean, they will play for you anyway, but they will, you know, when push comes to shove, they will really play for you. So I think he's just got this thing with all of them, and they really like him. Still relatively young, he was a good player, and he was technically a good player as well. And himself and Steve Holland, you know, they've worked extremely hard with everything they've done. And as I said to you before, they've studied everything. But I think, you know what, there will be more pressure on them in the next game than there will have been on today.
Well, they have to make the final now. Suddenly, Nil all at 70 minutes today is tight and tense and understandable. Nil all at 70 minutes in the next game is going to be murmurs from the crowd and come on, yeah, why haven't we scored? And that's the difference. They don't seem like great front runners. They don't seem like a team who'll be great at chasing a game. They still haven't been 1-0 down yet, for instance.
No, exactly. Well, not conceded a goal. So, you know, that's great. And I mean, if you're in that 3, 4 or 5, and obviously Maguire's now into stay with, yeah, with Stones.
He was good, by the way, Maguire, wasn't he?
Oh, very good. And he came out with the ball as well. Yeah. I mean, John Stones has always been a very, very good player. He was technically gifted on the ball, but wasn't a particularly good defender. He would kind of lose concentration at times. But now he has become a really good defender. The difficult to break down, mind you, were saying that, and obviously 2 or 3 times the Germans went straight through the middle, yeah, which you will get. You will always get chances like that. But, you know, if you're gonna play them, whoever you are, Sweden or the Ukraine at the weekend, Saturday, I think it is, you know, regardless of how England play, it will be tough because, you know, they run, they chase, they get behind the ball, they tackle, and, you know, they hustle and... It's a very, very difficult team to play against at the moment.
So, because I want to ask you about France. So what are we saying here about England? Because it seems like after every game we're still trying to figure out if they're any good or not. Are we saying they're going to win this thing? They're going to get to a final? Do you rate them? Do you think there's still something missing?
I'm not going to tell you they're going to win this thing. they quite possibly could. And I would just say to them, if they win this, they will have won it by stealth. But there's nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
You know, we would all accept that. And we know they've got really, really talented players. I mean, you know, the Sancho and the Bellinghams have hardly featured at all. And one or two more who are outstanding players. But this, he just likes players who he can rely on. Yeah. And then if needs be, you know, 10, 15 minutes from the end, he wants something a little bit different to kind of unlock the door. Then you might start to see one or two of these guys come on. But if you don't see it, it means that they're still going through this tournament and they work extremely hard. I've not seen any of the figures or the stats, but as I said to you before, you'd hate to play against them because they're all over you.
Were you confident in Mbappe as he walked up to the penalty spot last night?
No, I thought he was awful in the game.
Yeah, strange.
Yeah, he looked like a lad who'd lost his confidence. We know he's an absolutely fabulous player, but he was taking too many touches, he was dribbling to when he should have passed, and everything like that. No, I just said to my better half, I think he might miss this. Yeah. She wasn't interested, obviously, but but you know what? The whole thing about that game for me was that I think Deschamps got it absolutely, totally right. They got to 3-1, didn't they? And because the French were playing so well, I think Deschamps thinks, oh, let's go and get another one. You know, let's show them how brilliant we are. Pogba's goal, all that kind of stuff. There was a bit of kind of crooning and all that kind of stuff. Instead of saying, you know what, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll bring on an extra defender. They might poo-poo me. It doesn't matter. And I'll bring off, you know, one or two of the front men because obviously we're now in the next round. I just think they got that totally wrong. And by the way, as well, defensively, they were hopeless. They were absolutely hopeless. As soon as Switzerland went at them, well, in fact, all the game, every time Switzerland went at them, they looked extremely ropey.
Yeah, it was just a weird game as well. It was like they turned it on, France, for half an hour when they really needed to, and they were devastating for that 25 minutes. The goals were amazing, and then turned it right back off again.
Well, but why not turn it on from minute one?
Well, what's the answer to that?
Well, it comes from the manager, and obviously comes from one or two of the players a little bit, but I'm not sure how Deschamps manages them, whether he says, you know, to all of them, you're absolutely brilliant, you're fantastic, you're this, that, the other, or not. But I wouldn't have thought so, because I saw that the video from when France won the World Cup in Paris, and he made that, I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That speech at half time, and it's like, wow.
Mm. And and all the players are fired up. I mean, Pogba's a man possessed behind the scenes. They're all really into it. So that's why they've been average-ish this whole tournament. And then last night, it's hard to make sense of last night.
Well, it was, and they were just, it wasn't, you know, nobody actually looked like they were playing at 100%. They were cruising through it. And it's a really, really difficult one because I'm pretty sure there's an unbelievable lot of egos in that team. We're all certain that it is.
Yeah.
But even so, at some stage, those with egos, if you say to them at half time, you know what, we could go out of this competition if you lot don't pull your finger out, and you know, we'll be the laughing stock of France.
Yeah, but I have a thought there. Yeah, so I've no doubt that is what was said at half time, and often. Very, very good teams, when they start off a game badly, one of the hardest things to do is to change the momentum and to get back into it.
Yeah. So
this French team are so bloody talented and good that they start off badly and they still manage to turn around. Not just turn it around. 3-1 up, Pogba's dancing, we're home and hosed. And then they spit it up again. That's what's, like, unforgivable.
Well, and could have been 2-0 if your man scores a penalty.
Sure.
You know, so, yeah, it really seriously is. It must just be egos in the team, because, look, Kante was, you know, he works unbelievably hard, so it's not him. And in fairness to Pogba works hard. But then you look at one or two of the other players, and they kind of stroll a little bit, and it's a sort of, I'll do better next time, and I don't really get that. You know, I was fortunate enough to play in a team which was, oh my God, if they thought that you weren't pulling it out, they'd just pull you off after 10 minutes. And I don't get the mentality, and people say, oh, well, you know, they're super rich and they're all superstars and all that kind of stuff. But I tell you what, you still want to win stuff. And I just thought the French had a really, really good opportunity to win this competition, like a lot of other people. And they just threw it away for me.
I'm just seeing before you go, Rafa Benitez, Sky Sports confirming, will be announced as the Everton manager. 3-year deal is what they're looking at. So, here's the very unfair version of Benitez. The football won't be great, and he's a manager who, tactically, very shrewd and all that, but the football won't be great, and it's not like his career is in an upward trajectory. So, I don't know how excited Everton fans would be about this. What's your sense of Benitez at 61, 3-year deal here at Everton?
Well, let me say this. I think this is like any other manager that goes to a club generally, although there's a bit more hype. But if he wins the first six games, he's a genius and everybody will have forgot about it. I mean, he's everything to the nth degree. I told you the story about Stevie G with him, didn't I?
Go on.
When Stephen was going away to play for England, and Rafa had been there a few years at Liverpool, obviously, and... As you know, many times where Steven Gerrard carried that team, he was unbelievable. And Liverpool had just won at home the league. Stevie G was about to go away for international duty, and he was called down to Benitez's office after the game. And he got in there. And Stevie G says, you know, I was expecting you, well done today, make sure you don't get injured, all that kind of stuff. And he said, oh, while you're away and you've got some time to yourself, look at this, Benitez said. And it was a DVD. Do you know what it was?
Go on.
It was a DVD of all his mistakes, which you kind of go. And I said to Stephen, "What did you say?" I said, "I never said anything to him." He said, "Hey, because I didn't see it then." But when I got it and I saw it, he just said to myself, "Rafa, that's how he was. You could be absolutely sensational, but you could have just done something. You could have just gone back and nicked a corner from that fella." And I mean, that's the way that he is. And there's one thing about him is that. He'll get lots of money to spend at Everton because, I mean, they spent half a billion and they've wasted most of it, but he really will get that chance to spend money. So, we'll see.
Ironically, I'd love to talk to Benitez. Maybe he's like that with all the players. I suspect he probably was. But it seems, whatever way he read Gerrard was pretty keen to get some approval from Benitez, so maybe it worked out just fine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, they had a great relationship, but I think it was a classic old boot room thing, which was when you kept winning and you were like going to win leagues and cups and all that kind of stuff. The boot room would knock you down because all the newspapers and the supporters were calling you brilliant, you were geniuses, and you know you could do absolutely everything, invade the moon, the whole kind of thing. And that was the way that the club was. And I think Benitez liked that. He liked that kind of, you know, oh, yeah, you might have beaten this team 5-0 at the weekend, but by the way, my kids could have played against you and done just as well. So I think that's how Rafa is. That's his DNA, basically.
Listen, great having you on. So England to win this whole thing without conceding a goal, and we'll still be wondering if they're any good at the end of it. That's about what we're saying here.
I'm emigrating if that's happening.
Mark Lawrenson, thanks so much. Cheers.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating at least 100,000 to Irish football via England Goals this summer. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Well, I think you'll agree it's been quite the 24 hours at Euro 2020. Currently 1-1 between Sweden and Ukraine. 49 minutes on the clock. England beating Germany this afternoon, this evening, 2-0 at Wembley. Dan McDonnell of the Irish Independent is with us. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Joe.
Philippe Auclair will join us in a few moments' time to discuss France 3, Switzerland 3, and then 5-4 in the penalty shootout. Unbelievable game last night. First, Dan, initial thoughts on England at Wembley. There was a moment, we discussed this with Mark Lawrenson earlier on, where Raheem Sterling was standing on the halfway line with his hands on the back of his head and watched Thomas Muller scampering towards the English goal. Surely he was going to score. And Muller just drags it wide, just a touch. It's a perfectly decent effort on Muller's part, but he should have scored. And Sterling just collapses on the ground. It's like it just almost hits him how horrific it really would have been. And he can't even stand anymore. He hits the deck. And these are the margins, Dan, between hero status, which he very much has now, I think, this evening, and villain number one, front page of the Sun tomorrow.
Yeah, this is it. I mean, I suppose Paul Pogba would have liked that look. You know, if Switzerland's late shot last night had sort of arrowed wide. Alisson, I mean, it's. I think it's actually very whatever the Irish view is on English success, and it's obviously a mixed bag in terms of feelings and viewpoints towards it. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's people out there who, Liverpool fans or something, who wouldn't. But I sort of like, it's hard not to be happy for Sterling, I think, given that so much of his English career has been, like, he's been the subject, as you've alluded to there, almost, of like a fair share of sort of rancor and, you know, sort of bizarre, questionable criticism at times. And probably is a classic case of an international tournament player that, you know, sometimes you get sucked into thinking the player's had an amazing season at club level is going to automatically be the star at the tournament. Where obviously in some cases, you know, these players are just tired. You know, some of the ones who've had a really great season, you know, they've been absolutely sort of balls out the whole time, and it may be hard for them to maintain that level into the finals, whereas Sterling has actually delivered for England. But it's possibly the fact that he's possibly fresher than some of the players, and he's given them a real change of pace at times, and he's been good. England generally, I'm not so sure, but I mean, they've won, so the hype train takes off now, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, it was like lap of honour scenes at Wembley, you know, it was quasi, we've won this thing almost atmosphere. But I get it, you beat Germany, the draw is wide open, and there is a sense now that they're really up and running in this tournament. It was interesting, that point you make on Sterling and his relationship with England. Rio Ferdinand after the game was almost saying, can we now at last recognise Sterling and his status as a proper international footballer for England of huge importance? Can we finally acknowledge that? And Lineker and Shearer were all falling over themselves to do that as well. But it's also interesting the way punditry has changed. I don't know where you're watching the build-up, and Rio Ferdinand was making the point that I texted Raheem. I get on well with quite a few of the lads. I texted Raheem and I said, now is the time. And Raheem wrote back and said, yeah, it is. Now, it didn't seem like the most electric WhatsApp conversation worth to have leaked out.
Didn't quite get an insight into the world there, really. Like, but I mean, we've had better WhatsApps here.
Well,
in Ireland.
At the same time, it still just sort of occurred to me. I was like, well, it's amazing just the way the media has changed, the way punditry has changed now, that, you know, Dunphy and Giles like would have made a virtue out of, well, I stopped talking to Jack Charlton, you know, because for me to do the job properly and be dispassionate, I can't be worried about what Jack thinks, or I can't be in contact with the players. Whereas now, like, there's a degree of the friendlier you are, the better. And like, we'll send you out to interview Raheem now this week. And, you know, Peter Crouch will have all the players on his show during the week, and then he might be talking about them on BT Sport in 6 months' time. And there are upsides to it for sure. I mean, maybe you get some insight, although not based on that Rio Ferdinand retelling of the conversation with Sterling. But certainly the downside would be, how equipped then is Rio Ferdinand to call Sterling out if he's not having a good game? You know, it's just one of the interesting aspects of punditry these days, with these superstar names and these, you know, multi-million person followings on social media, that they're all, they've a weird kind of, they walk a weird line in terms of being critical and then also being mates with the players and hanging out with them. It's anyway, look, it was just I wouldn't have brought it up even if you hadn't mentioned Sterling and his relationship with England, but it just jumped out to me. It's like when Ferdinand was saying that, I was thinking, is this, but can I trust you now at half time and full time to be honest with me about Sterling's performance if it doesn't go well?
But that, listen, but that's how things change, though, isn't it? Like, it's like Rio Ferdinand's in the generation of the first, you know, possibly, you know, the first generation of social media players, in the sense that by the time he'd finished playing, you know, he was in that world. And maybe, like, you know, journalists, we're going on a complete tangent here, but, like, you know, journalists of a certain age in Ireland would be nostalgic about the times they had the home phone numbers for Ireland players and, you know, the real superstar Irish players of the era. Whereas now, sometimes these players operate, the elite players operate in such a bubble, you know, with so few people around them that maybe they can trust that the superstar pundits are possibly in that small number of people that they might actually really trust and interact with on a regular basis, because, you know, they might have, at other times in their life, they might have, you know, been burned by people they trusted, if you know what I mean. Like, it's a reflection of, yeah, how things have changed. I mean, like Neville and Carragher and that are now, you know, they're bigger stars than, possibly bigger stars than some of the players themselves that are starting off and breaking through. They're bigger, you know, than Saka, you know, or some of those players. Even, you know, even Foden and people like that, who are obviously the players doing it. But so much of the debate is shaped by the superstar pundits now. But listen, we all feed into that in some description. And we saw that probably the Super League debate was a classic example of that, where they almost became sort of spokespeople for a movement and they're all on one side of the thing. But that's it. Like, you get that style of commentary then that goes with it. Like, hasn't that been a criticism of the Manchester United players, even with Solskjaer at times, in terms of the criticism hasn't been there? Mm-hmm. So there's two ways of looking at it. Like, I mean, you know, the joy, like, you know, that, you know, Dunphy and co never had to rely on sort of facing some of the people that they were skating about, you know. They never really had that reliance. So there's a number of layers to the whole thing.
Yeah. So the game itself then, curious for your thoughts on it. I thought the general reception, just looking on Twitter at various UK journalists to the team that Southgate picked, was pretty negative. People felt there was a degree of cowardice about it. It was too conservative. The likes of Foden, Grealish, Mount, maybe to a lesser extent Rashford, all left out. He matched up Germany, obviously, with Walker, Stones and Maguire at the back, Trippier at right wing back, Shaw the other wing back, Phillips and Declan Rice up against Kroos and Goretzka, and then Saka started after his performance against the Czech Republic, Sterling on the other wing and Harry Kane through the middle. So, in effect, really a 3-4-3. And I would say, to be fair to Southgate, Dan, and the accusations that it was overly conservative, after the first 10 minutes, when Germany were really on top and they had those big chances, you know, Rice had to deliberately foul Goretzka at one point, and the Werner chance, I think, fell relatively early on. Germany seemed to go through England pretty quickly. But to be fair, after the first 10-15 minutes, whilst the likes of Foden and Grealish and Mount were all out, Shaw and Trippier played pretty high up. And so it was definitely more of a 3-4-3. And in some ways, you know, you look at Shaw's involvement in the goals, for instance, it was quite an attacking tilt to the formation, as opposed to, you know, Croatia, where the fullbacks didn't leave their own half.
Yeah, no, listen, obviously in hindsight, at 60 minutes, I don't know if any match reports would have been hugely complimentary about Southgate's approach. But the fact that the team finished the game strongly at the 90-minute game, and, you know, there's a vindication of the overall strategy there. And you see the discussion turning around to, well, this is a team that hasn't conceded in 6 hours or whatever, you know, hasn't conceded a goal since March. And it looks like they're going to try and win the competition in that particular way. Although I must say, it's going to be interesting now, whoever they play on Saturday. We're watching Sweden-Ukraine, that's 1-1 here. Like, whoever they play on Saturday, they're going to be the favourites, the overwhelming favourites. More than likely, if they were to get through that and play in the semi-finals, they're going to be the overwhelming favourites as well, even though I think Denmark are pretty damn good. But will that sort of, how will they approach that type of scenario where they're expected to really, really, like, take the game to a sort of a so-called lesser opponent? Actually, if they play Sweden, for example, we've seen Sweden against Spain try and frustrate opposition, and it'll be interesting to see how England cope with that. Because I have to admit, I don't know. Like, I think sometimes maybe as Irish people comment, and do we let our heart rule our head on occasion by trying to dampen down how England looked, you know, and we're trying to be anti-hype when you sort of consume so much of it. But I don't know, I thought the game wasn't very good, and I wouldn't have said that the performance you were looking at going, there you go, there's your champions, you know? I wouldn't be madly confident about them going all the way, but I can understand how you can build that argument. Well, they have a certain degree of structure around it, you know, they definitely, you know, other than the sort of once in each half, like they weren't giving up sort of massive chances. But I don't know, like the euphoria of beating Germany obviously adds a tint to it, but what are Germany now? Like, that's the question. Mm-hmm. You know, and is Germany's reputation making it look more impressive than it was? I don't know. I'm just not. Yeah. I'm not sort of thinking. Yes, that was that. That there's your champions in waiting right there, or anything like that. But
no,
has anyone declared that? I mean, I know there's a couple of giddy commentators, but I think to be fair, I think the sober analysis of it is that they've still got a fair bit of work to do.
No, I think the general analysis over in the UK, to be fair, has been fairly sober. And they understand the plan at the moment looks like it's reductive and it's going to stay that way. They're not creating many chances and they're not sure if Gareth Southgate knows his best team. I think all of these things are being discussed. But at the same time, when you're not conceding goals and you've got the talent they have who can nick one at the other end, and the team are all fairly, I think, bought into Southgate and together, and they've got home advantage, there's a few ducks in a row. And France obviously contributed to that last night, to say the least. And to that end, Philippe Auclair is with us. Hi, Philippe.
Good evening to you.
France, Philippe, they are one weird, weird team. I cannot work them out. That was a bizarre evening last night. Now, unbelievably enjoyable from our end. I'd say for French people, it was infuriating. Where do you want to start on this madness last night?
Well, Where would you like me to start? Where would you like me to start?
Okay. I mean,
We could start.
I've got one. I've got one. As Kylian Mbappe was walking towards the penalty spot, what were your levels of confidence, I wonder?
Oh, zero. As we all are these days, I was on multiple WhatsApp groups with various friends, French friends, other journalists and so forth, and there was absolutely nobody who had any confidence in Kylian Mbappe. It felt like, it was just the wrong call to make, to have him as the fifth taker of the penalties. And I think all of us thought he was going to miss, or the penalty was going to be stopped, which it was. He didn't miss the penalty, at least he hit the target, and it was a proper stop by Jan Sommer. But we all believed that, we all felt he was going to miss. And that's a fact. I mean, I've got the text to prove it. It's just one of those things. We as football fans, know these kind of things.
No, and
it's exactly the same thing. I remember when David Batty went to take his penalty, I thought, he's going to miss.
And with the greatest of respect to David Batty, even he would concede he's no Kylian Mbappe. But it's interesting. The reason I asked you that question is because I was watching here with the producer of the show last night. We stayed on to watch it, and we didn't feel good about Mbappe. Mark Lawrenson was on the show earlier. He didn't feel good about Mbappe. There was something. No. Stephen Kelly on the commentary here in Ireland on RTE said wasn't so sure. There was just this general feeling. Against all expectations, this tournament for Mbappe has never quite got going. What has happened to Mbappe over the past couple of weeks? What's the word?
You could, and we have to talk about that. You could say, first of all, the tactical setup was not perhaps the best for him against the Swiss, possibly. You have to say that he's in a strange place. I know we've talked, I think the two of us have talked about it before. He's in a strange place as far as his career is concerned. He's at a crossroad. He has to make some big decisions for the remainder of his career. He's only very young. He's only 22. But his next move is going to be very important. And is he going to set PSG? Is he not going to stay? And I know people will say, well, how can that have an influence on the way that a player behaves in an international game? The answer to that is that, of course, when Kylian Mbappe is taking the strides toward the penalty spot, he doesn't think about, am I going to play for Real Madrid, Liverpool or PSG next year? He doesn't think about that. It just means that the focus as a whole is not what it should be. There's the fact that he's also had a season, a strange season, with his club. I think that he's probably trying to do too much. People call it showboating. It's almost to me as if he wanted to show that whatever Neymar can do, he can do better. He's not in a good place. But to be honest, to put the responsibility of France's exit from the Euro on Kylian Mbappé's shoulders would be really, really unfair. Mm-hmm. Because he's not a culprit in this. He's just one of the people who took part in a very poor, actually shocking performance. But none is more guilty than Didier Deschamps, obviously.
Go on.
Well, his tactical setup was insane. It made no sense whatsoever. I had heard that he was about to choose a three-man defense on the Saturday. It started to leak very early. And I got, you know, I went through all the games that France had played since Didier Deschamps became its manager back in 2012. And they had played 116 games, and of these 116 games, three of them had been played with three at the back. And one of them was a friendly against Albania, two of them were Nations League games against Sweden, I believe, and Croatia. And the results had been positive results. There had been three victories, but the manner of the result, it actually had been a bit of a shambles, especially I remember against Sweden. But I thought, this is very odd. Why should we move? Is it because Lucas Hernandez is perhaps not quite fit enough, and we don't trust whoever would be depping at left back? I mean, it's all very strange, because you could even imagine like Léo Dubois or Pavard against a team like Switzerland, with all apologies and all respect to Switzerland, you could imagine, you know, why not play them as left back, or even Kimpembe, as he did, by the way, for 12 minutes in the first half. So it was a very strange choice, and it threw the whole team into a kind of weird chaos where nobody knew what their roles were anymore. When one of the strengths of Didier Deschamps' team beforehand was precisely its organization and the fact that every single player had a very definite role and defined role, well-defined role, and that Deschamps, being somebody who doesn't believe in big turnovers, you basically was using 12, 13 players. Everybody knew exactly what to do. Then suddenly, he throws this onto us, put Rabiot in a wing back, and don't get me started about Rabiot, in a left back or wing back position. Mm-hmm. Pavard had a horrible game. But to be honest, nobody knew exactly what to do. And so you could see in the first half, for example, the way that Kante and Pogba were working in midfield. Pogba cannot work in a two-man midfield. We all know that.
Yeah.
He cannot. He needs a third guy. It can be Rabiot. It can be Tolisso. It used to be Matuidi, right? And he cannot do that. And we were not using him properly. And to be honest, the first half is one of the most awful halves of football that the French team has done under Didier Deschamps. And after that, well, a mixture of luck and Hugo Lloris' talent brought us back into the game, and France managed to blow it again, because this time of arrogance.
Well, I'll come to
the
arrogance
of that team is dreadful.
I'll come to the arrogance in a second. Has Deschamps explained his thinking on the three at the back?
I think Didier Deschamps as an amazing talent to drown the fish, as we say in French, to be a tap. Basically, which when you open it, it's lukewarm water. Which is, if you are looking for him to say things which are well defined, which are straight answers to straight questions, wait again, because you won't get them. He's very good at going round, as he was, you know, as a midfielder, avoiding the avoiding players and avoiding the difficult ones, and he has. I mean, he's given some elements of explanation. The fact that, yes, there was not, I wouldn't call that an injury crisis, but there were a couple of players missing. Digne is missing, which is, you know, really bad. Was missing, I should say. Shouldn't use the present anymore. Lucas Hernandez was not quite fit enough to start. So therefore, they thought of a system in which as well, I guess, the idea was to give Griezmann a bit more space to express himself as a kind of number 10 behind the two strikers.
Yeah.
And so that on paper, it sort of made sense.
Yeah.
But then again, if you do that, where are you going to put Clément Lenglet, who's barely put one foot in front of the other for Barcelona, at the heart of the defense? You could see, I mean, I think it's actually almost unfair on the player. You know, you pick him, he hasn't played much. It's a system he's never played with France. He's never played with Varane and Kimpembe on each side of him. He doesn't have the, and poor thing, Seferovic decides to have one of his great nights against him.
Yeah.
So, but I think Deschamps has got, yes, to be seen as, just as he has to be seen as one of the great architects of the triumph of 2018, which was achieved thanks to him, whether you liked it or not.
Mm.
And I didn't like it much, but you have to agree to that and acknowledge it. You have the same way to acknowledge the fact that the way he directed this team and managed that team for that crucial game just wasn't right. And some of the things which had worried me, and again, you will remember some conversations we had before the tournament about
mm-hmm.
France,
mm-hmm.
did actually happen.
Yeah.
It turned out to be true. And the fears I had, and I wasn't the only one to have those fears, but it turned out to be true, to have a foundation.
So France didn't have a shot on target in that first half. And then there was the VAR penalty, Pavard's tackle, and Lloris makes the save. So this is a wake-up call on 54 minutes, that this could have been 2-0 down. You really now need to get things moving. And lo and behold, what followed was just some of the most thrilling football that we've seen in this competition. So the penalty happens on 54 minutes. Lloris makes the save. Benzema scores 2 minutes later, and Mbappe puts the pass through. Benzema's flick is outrageous. It's 1-1. 2 minutes later, again, we're down on Mbappe a touch, but some of the most glorious interplay between Griezmann and Mbappe, and Benzema nods it home into an empty net, and suddenly it's 2-1. And then, just to put some sheen on the whole thing, Pogba does his thing on 75 minutes. Some beautiful dancing. The director has to wait at least a minute to cut to a replay, and it's good night, Irene. It's over. It's done. They've taken this out of the fire. The Swiss players, several of them, accused the French then of a degree of arrogance. They sensed arrogance on the pitch, and we saw it all over the place. If you look at Coman, who may have been injured at that stage, I don't know. Certainly him and Deschamps were arguing over his fitness. But the cross in for Seferovic's second goal, Coman is sauntering and makes a last-minute sprint for show to try and close down the crosser. And moments like that crept into their play, and Pogba gets caught in possession again. You know, it was the real focus of Roy Keane on ITV, that for all the brilliance, and goodness me, Pogba was a joy to watch in so many ways last night. For all the brilliance, he then breaks your heart with that moment of sloppiness. But that point, you mentioned arrogance, and it was like so striking that the Swiss players themselves sensed an arrogance and said as much afterwards.
Yep. And that is something which, again, I mean, the players have got to take responsibility for that. I have to say, I'm a little bit loath to have a go at Paul Pogba, because he had an absolutely magnificent tournament until then. He was probably, for me, the best midfielder in the tournament before the round of 16.
Yeah.
Some of the football he played on the night against the Swiss, is including when France were doing really badly, was absolutely extraordinary. His range of passing is probably unrivaled in world football. And I say that absolutely seriously. I mean it. I don't think there are many players. I don't think there is another player who is capable of, perhaps Kevin De Bruyne, but who is a different kind of passer. But that's about it.
Yeah.
So we're talking really the top of the top of the top of the world's elite. But then there's what happens after his goal. It was... One thing I wonder is that, and I really, it's really something that I hope to have a chance to talk to him about at one stage, one point, maybe miraculously it will happen. Scoring a goal, especially a goal like this one, which normally sends your team into the quarterfinals, you've done the break, as a tennis player would say. I still find it extraordinary that your first reaction is not a reaction of joy. I don't understand it. It's beyond me. And maybe I'm an old codger who doesn't understand, but it's not something, you know, like when Poulsen scored for Denmark, or Forsberg scored for, or Zinchenko scored for Ukraine, or anybody else, or Benzema scoring. By the way, what an injustice that Benzema's goal is not going to be remembered as it should, as one of the great Euro goals. It's absolutely magnificent. I feel very sorry for Karim, by the way. We should talk about him. But I'm thinking this is weird. There's a kind of distanciation between yourself and what you're doing. I'm not meaning that. It's going beyond the arrogance and the fact that you're actually doing something which the other guys are not going to like at all. And they're going to want to have their back on you. You know, they want to a measure of revenge almost on you. So it's not very clever.
Mm.
But it's also the distanciation between what you've just achieved and your emotional state and involvement. It's, for me, it shows that you're not entirely in the game. If you see what I mean, I think there is a moment where you've got to abandon yourself to the rhythm of a game when you're a player. And I think most players do that. Some players don't.
Mm.
And it can be one of their strengths. In this particular instance, there was something. At the time, I winced when I saw that. And to be honest, I winced, and I'm not a Pogba basher.
Yeah.
And I really actually was really happy for him, because I thought he's proved so many people wrong again in this tournament, just like he had in 2018. He's showing what a wonderful player he is, and that when he's like that, he genuinely wasn't one of the great midfielders we have at the moment in world football. But this I really just couldn't understand it and countenance it. And I thought this is really stupid. But this arrogance runs through the side, I'm afraid. And it's one thing that we were talking about before the tournament. Mm-hmm. I felt that there was in this team, in the squad, in the media, in everything around it, something which reminded me of 2002.
Mm.
As in, we are the holders of the World Cup. Nothing can really happen to us. Oh, little Switzerland, what about them? They've never beaten us in a competitive game. It's going to be all right. Okay, so, oh, we have a problem. 1-0 down, but Hugo saves the penalty. 1-0, 2-1, 3-1, scoring goals for play, you know, just for fun. It's going to be fine. And no, of course it's not fine.
Mm.
It's not fine. Mm. It's very disappointing, to say the least.
Philippe, can I just ask, just to go back to Deschamps briefly? I see there was some discussion of his future today. I think there was a couple of questions asked about his future. And I don't know how serious that is. You watch Germany this evening, and there's a case of maybe a World Cup winning manager who overstayed his welcome. I don't know. Is it possible that this hangs over him now in terms of a certain reputational damage? I'm not saying that he gets sacked next week or something, but that the stain of this game just hangs.
It's a possibility. I'm sorry, I just lost you for a second here, but am I still with you?
Yes.
Okay. I would say that, yes, of course, a number of questions have been asked, and also automatically the Zidane bandwagon, you know, gets out of the station and starts rumbling through the countryside again. But the thing is that Didier Deschamps has already signed an extension of his contract to the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. And that before the tournament, it was very clearly said by the powers that be at the French Federation that whatever happened at the Euro would not condition what happened to Didier Deschamps himself. They wanted him, and they want him to be the man in charge of defending the title he won in 2018. So even though I agree with you, I think that it should be one of those moments where you think, well, okay, it's 9 years now. The team looks a little bit jaded sometimes. It wasn't very convincing in the group phase. To be honest, it hadn't been convincing in the qualifiers in 2021, which we played at the games against Ukraine, Kazakhstan, and they were terrible.
Mm.
And you think as well, his type of football is starting to show its age perhaps a little bit, and international football has moved on from this ultra-pragmatic approach, perhaps. it might be that Didier Deschamps, who is a very intelligent, very smart, very clever man, who knows football, he knows far more of football than any of us put together will ever know. But that doesn't mean necessarily he should remain in this job, because I don't think he will ever change. He's always been the same kind of manager. Always. Mm. And he had a real moment of madness when he decided on the tactical setup. I don't think he will have it twice.
Mm.
And so, no, there is, I wouldn't say a clamor, but there are some people saying enough is enough. To lose in such conditions is just not acceptable, and we shouldn't do what I was going to say the Germans, but also the Portuguese have done with Santos, who is exactly same case, a manager who's been in place for a very long time and who seems to have lost the magic touch, the mojo.
Yeah, it's amazing how long the welcome has always outstayed that extra touch too long. Philippe, as I understand it, there's a French radio station looking to get you on the air right now. So
I'm still all right.
Are you?
I'm still all right, yeah, for the time being. They haven't called me yet.
Okay, well, listen, we have to take an ad break nonetheless. So we'll say our goodbyes. I suspect we'll talk about France again at some stage over the next few weeks. Great to have you on, though. Thanks so much for making time for us this evening.
That's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Philippe Auclair there with us after France's exit from Euro 2020. We're going to take a short break, back with more from Dan McDonnell on some of those points Philippe made and a bit more in England, I suspect, as well. Still 1-1 between Sweden and Ukraine. Football on Off the Ball with Paddy Power Save Our Game, donating €10,000 to Irish football for every goal England scored at the Euros. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.com. We'll take a short break, back with Dan in just a sec.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating at least 100,000 to Irish football via England Goals this summer. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Still 1-0 Sweden, Ukraine. I did note Philippe wanted to talk Benzema. We'll ask him about Benzema again next time he's on. So that was kind of an interesting point on Pogba's celebration, Dan, that for us it was, I guess, kind of funny, and the director was waiting quite a long time to cut to the replay, but Philippe found himself wincing. My read on it was that if it was a World Cup final and that was the winner, he would have exploded in a Tardelli-esque way, but almost this was icing on the cake. We had broken the back of the game already with the second goal. The third was just glorious polish, and there was, I guess, a more joyful expression of what Cantona did all those years ago, where he stopped. Like, that was my interpretation of it. That's why he hadn't lost control. It wasn't a vital goal. This was like where we expect to be in the tournament. These are the things I can do. And hey, everybody, look how good I actually am. That was my sense of Pogba. I suspect he's not incapable of losing himself in a moment.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, yeah, I hadn't probably looked at it that way myself, but I mean, sort of Philippe was consuming the French team a lot more and sort of thinking about it a lot more deeply. And I can sort of, you know, I can see perhaps where he's coming from. I mean, it is interesting, like, you mean, you know, how, like, the outcome shapes everything. Like, I can understand why he wants to talk about Benzema, because, I mean, that touch for that goal was amazing, and it's, you know, it's condemned to history. But even, like, Pogba's performance at times in extra time was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, Mbappe, listen, anyone can miss a penalty. But actually, the worst thing Mbappe did in the match was obviously that miss from the Pogba pass.
What was going on? It was a strange execution on his part, and then he's wincing as if something's twinged on him. It was just really odd. I've never seen Mbappe look so awkward in a goal in my life. What was he trying to do? It was hard to know what was going on.
I don't really know. I mean, listen, sometimes players, you know, it's like someone has a miss and they stay down injured out of pride when they do something bad, or they hobble back, you know, as if to sort of say, this is what really happened. But I don't know. I think maybe everyone's confidence he was going to miss the penalty might have been, in some respects, influenced by that episode, because it was just so bizarre how he was even carrying himself in the aftermath of that, because it looked like he'd maybe done something, you know, but he was able to play on. And I don't know, I'm sure in time, it almost feels like there's an Mbappe story we haven't heard, but the story of his finals that we'll hear in due course. You can overanalyze these things, but even his walk down the, you know, no one coming up to him afterwards, visibly in the aftermath, it was just all a bit strange. the whole thing. But like, to go back to the point, I mean, that Pogba pass, and there was a couple of them in extra time where, like, he has these sort of unplayable moments. And I even think with the goal that he conceded, like, there was a lot that had to go wrong after he gave the ball away. But because it's Pogba, it's a bit like we said earlier, but it's, you know, Sterling, it's forgotten about. But, like, I mean, that, Sterling's mistake was far worse than Pogba's.
And
you
I
know,
think
in terms
it,
of
I think if,
in,
if
terms of lead up to a chance.
Yeah, if you're asking a midfielder to play, look, that moment of the game, stakes being so high, it's a mistake for sure. But if you're asking a midfielder to play, then you have to accept there are going to be mistakes in possession. It's just inevitable, unfortunately. And but on the whole, like his performance was just outrageous. I think you can mention both. I don't think, you know, they're kind of mutually exclusive points. He had that one bad moment and he was really badly punished for it. But as you said, some of the passes, the one for Mbappe in particular, so that was like devastating and super effective. And then there were even just show off style points, like his outside of the foot half volley out to the near touchline just took the crowd's breath away. You could hear hear everyone go, oh, that's a different plane to the one most players are operating at. And I would throw into the mix as well, in the build up to the second goal, it's Pogba who wins the ball back in a Kante-esque way in the Swiss half. He goes in, and he goes in hard, and he makes a point of winning the ball. And I said to Pat Nevin last night, it was one of those instances where at Manchester United, so often, if you watch Pogba very closely, and a lot of us do, at United, he will often plant his feet in a very exaggerated way, as if to say, oh, I'm out of the game here. I've bought the dummy, as opposed to a Kante who will do the right thing. And even if he sort of buys a dummy, he'll very quickly react and try and get back in. Pogba will almost put his hand, won't literally do it, but what he's doing is putting his hands up and saying, I'm out of this passage of play, kind of a moment. Does it all the time. And he could have done that at this moment last night for France, but he didn't. And he kept going and he went in again and won the ball again. And it led to the goal. And so that, combined with the passing, combined with just his overall performance and the hard work and everything else, I mean, I thought the ITV panel went in really hard on him. You know?
I thought it was over the top, like, completely. And it's just like, but then again, that's the price of, like, being a world star. Your performance gets spoken about, like, more than anyone else. But I don't know what Pogba, and I'll defer to Philippe on his, as I said, he's watching very closely and his temperament. Like, I sometimes wonder if playing for France is a nice bit of escapism for him. You know, like, I actually sort of felt a bit sad for him that the tournament was over. Like, I kind of wonder, will he be in the team at a tournament now? He has to be.
Yeah.
Even though
yeah.
France were a massive disappointment, you know, and they are probably the biggest flops of the tournament, and given their, you know, standing beforehand, I still think he has to be in it. But, like, he now goes back to his life where, like, you know, he puts in a sort of a, you know, a grim performance on a Tuesday night away against, I don't know, like, whoever it is, Burnley. Mm. And we all debate whether he's world class or not, you know. And it's just like, I can understand, like, over sort of a 40-50 game season, like, you think you know, he probably sometimes just gets very bored.
To state the obvious, he is and has always been a man with options, not stuck in Manchester.
I know. But this is the life that he's, you know, this is the life that he leads now, you know. But he's stuck in this Premier League news cycle zone that he can't escape. And then he goes to play for France in a major tournament and he can just, like, express himself. And, like, it's just brilliant to watch. Like, you see that at times, but, like, we saw it in 2018 and we saw it here.
Yeah.
And I sort of feel, I kind of wonder, you know, does he just, is this just fun? And he actually enjoys this football more than he enjoys the drudgery of maybe the week-to-week life that maybe just doesn't do it for him anymore.
It's an interesting question.
He's entitled. Because, you know, he's entitled to maybe it's unprofessional. You know, it's unprofessional maybe, but...
But there's something amiss because his highlights reel for this tournament trumps his highlights reel of the entirety of last season.
Oh, like, I would have thought so. I mean, wasn't there one Champions League game during the year where we spoke about it here? He came on for 10, 15 minutes when I think it was the game where they launched a comeback, and he was just outrageous. Mm. And he just has these moments where he's in the zone, where he's like, yes, this is why we talk about him all the time, because he is probably, like, he is one of the world's best players in that form.
And so,
absolutely no shadow of a doubt, you know?
I'm thinking as well, his penalty last night.
But the overall standard of penalties was actually very good.
Is it getting better? I'm thinking of the Manchester United who beat them in the final, Villarreal in the final, where the penalty standard was incredible. I guess it would follow that every other aspect of football has improved, so penalties must be too. It seems like they are at the moment.
some of them were Kimpembe's penalty was unbelievable. Like, there was a couple of them that you, as much as everyone was saying, well, Mbappe's going to miss, there was a few coming up before that that people were probably saying, oh, he's going to miss it. And in fairness, like, I mean, it's mad that we've had this whole discussion and actually not talked about the fact that, like, boring Switzerland were actually incredible in their own way in terms of what they did and, like, threw the shackles off and just went for it. I mean, they were brilliant. Like, they were absolutely brilliant.
Well, I was looking at Granit Xhaka saying, what's going on here? Granit Xhaka was phenomenal. Even Roy Keane was praising him to the hilt. I mean,
is that the same liberation, Jota? Was that the sense of, I'm not in this Premier, this bloody Arsenal thing where, like, everyone hates me or, you know, people, and now I'm back in a place where I'm possibly the best player or I'm around people I've played with for a long period of time. And all of a sudden you realise, like, this is why these players generate a sort of a price in the first place. It's why I love international football in a way that it's like you take away some of the noise of the news cycle around the club game.
Yeah.
And you don't have a choice who your teammates are to a point, you know, like you're thrown together by just geography and you go and play. Mm. And actually, like, you can see that it means a hell of a lot to them. And there's something really, really enjoyable about that compared to the toxic nature of some of the club debates sometimes. And I'm sure for some of the players, it probably feels that way too. It's a complete release.
Yeah. It's a more natural thing to play with your countrymen, same culture. You're all in this together. Everyone's very settled. The Xhaka thing is, I mean, I hadn't seen him ever play like that, I don't think, for Arsenal.
Mm.
Couldn't remember seeing him so dominant, so... pumped up, and like the speech he gave before the penalties, and he said afterwards, yeah, I'm sorry to curse, but it's effing amazing, man, was his direct quote. And he played like that. I've never seen that level of passion for him for Arsenal. I wonder, it seems like a hackneyed thing to even throw out there, but there is a purity about playing for your country that isn't there when you're playing for some oil state, you know. There is
level. I think it's, but also as well, there's probably a shelf life to it too. Like, you have a couple of weeks and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know what I mean? And then you head off back to your club life. Whereas if things aren't going well in your club life, like, you're thinking, God, I'm here for the next 7 months, you know, or 3 years or 4 years. I mean, it's basically like, you know, you can compare it to any, like, people like a sort of a good holiday experience, you know, and everyone just gets into that buzz and into that mode.
Mm.
And like, that's why you see, like, some countries, they get it really right around these tournaments in terms of getting that balance and unity, and others are miserable. And there's some players just seem to, like, feed into that and feed off it. But, like, look at Sterling. Like, Sterling is on the way out of Man City, potentially.
Yeah.
Like, he's had a sort of a grim season, and he's loving it. So, you know, it's sometimes it's a completely different camp and a mode, and it just elevates some players that others, you know, others that are in a different zone.
Mm. It's very simple why Pogba's better for France. Kante is a texture. I do accept that, but I would also throw in that we're seeing Pogba do more special things on the ball for France, which you can't really put down to Kante. I think there is something more to this than just Kante. On
2018 World Cup final, Kante had a virus, went off at half time, and like Pogba was still brilliant in the match. You know what I mean? So it's not just that.
There you go. Perfectly refuted point, but Kante helps, I've no doubt. On Harry Kane, by the way, so look, Sterling, I think you're right, it does seem like he's out the door, or certainly City are more than happy to use him in exchange for either Grealish or Kane or whoever the summer plays out. The form of Harry Kane, if England are going to sit there and be solid and not create oodles of chances, then Kane's ability to take one when it comes is going to become pretty important, and to involve himself in a game a bit more, which was the real talking point at halftime in BBC. Klinsmann was saying he needs to play himself into the game the way he does for Spurs. Come deep, get involved, feel alive was Klinsmann's point. Shearer felt his movement wasn't good enough up top. We had Mark Lawrenson on earlier. I mean, he did make the point, like, how many chances has Kane missed? It's not like they're creating loads for him. But the form of Kane, Dan, what did you see from him today? I thought he grew into the game, actually.
No, he did. And, like, listen, he's an exceptional player. And, like, some of the positions he took up late on showed it. But, again, at the 60-minute mark, you're sort of, like, you know, there was a big call, I think, to substitute him. I was sort of sitting there wondering, is there just something physically wrong here that we're, like, this is a classic case, again, of a major tournament story where, you know, you're relying on this player, so you stick with them no matter what. Yeah, the counterpoint to that is they didn't even put Calvert-Lewin on the bench, which was interesting.
Mm.
So you're thinking that if you have a real concern about Kane's fitness, you'd have that the most like-for-like replacement there available.
I think if he had a very genuine injury at the moment, say his ankle was busted as it often is, that would have leaked out by now. I think it's tiredness or fatigue.
I would have thought so, but even with that, like, there was clearly a confidence there that didn't go for the alternative on the bench. And he's clearly decided with the way that they're going to play, with the sort of the wide attackers that they have, they need Kane, as he did several times, like dropping back deep, as he does so well, you know, and setting the wheels in motion for, you know, a sort of pretty much like the first goal. You know, that's what he does so many times. And again, and he replicated that later on, you know, a couple of other moves. So he's so important to how they play. They obviously can't countenance not having him there. And ironically enough, we'll see. I mean, this game's gone to extra time now. You can see how, like, if you are in a situation where they're going to be playing a lot more higher up the pitch, potentially in the quarterfinal against their opponents, then he becomes absolutely essential, even if he's not at his best. And he's not at his best.
No.
But still, his 75% may still be enough to bring 100% out of Sterling. And that justifies his presence there.
Yeah. God, it's all very interesting. We never even remarked him on the fact that yesterday was just brilliant. Like, it was just so good.
Croatia-Spain, by the way. Ah. Like, you know what I mean? That was sort of off the couch stuff.
Yeah.
And it's almost, you know.
Unless there's an obvious game I'm not thinking of, like 3 days before, that France-Switzerland game is the best game I've seen in years for just sheer enjoyment.
Well, yeah. Like, I was at France-Argentina at the World Cup in 2018. Do you remember the 4-3 game?
That's
which
years.
Was definitely 3 years ago. No, like in terms of major tournament.
Yeah.
But I thought that was great to be at. I thought it was amazing. But I actually have to say that the plot twists of the games yesterday, particularly, surpassed it. You know, particularly as it didn't have the conclusion that you expected. Like, you know what I mean? That the underdogs actually won.
Yeah.
You know, that it was built for heroic failure. And yet, no, they just went and did it. And I can just imagine the buzz in Switzerland today, like, sort of be off the charts, really.
Oh, listen, Toblerones all around and all that. Then.
Yeah, cliches, national stereotypes. The boring Swiss after the best game of all time. You know.
To finish in this, and there's no time for you to reply, by the way. Was that Dan McDonald I saw jogging in Ellenfield Park, Whitehall yesterday? Tell him he looked great. I'm not sure about the headband, though. That was him. That was Dan.
I was there, but I wasn't wearing a headband.
You were, he saw you. Jim saw you. Yeah. Jim saw you.
Oh, I don't care, Jim.
Quite the image.
You are right.
Listen, we didn't get through half the talking points. There's so much going on at the moment. Let's talk again soon. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers. As Dan said, they're into extra time there. Sweden 1, Ukraine 1. 3 minutes gone in the first half of extra time.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating at least 100,000 to Irish football via England Goals this summer. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.